accuses Syria of widespread and systematic attacks against the civilian population. Amnesty says at least 9 people died in custody with signs of torture. Most had taken part in demonstrations and had been pulled from their homes by soldiers. Amnesty also accuses the international community of double standards while taking action against Libya in the name of human rights. It's put no concrete pressure on Syria. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency has been quietly giving away hundreds of mobile homes stockpiled for years since Hurricane Katrina to Native American tribes that are in desperate need of affordable housing. Some hurricane victims living in FEMA RVs and travel trailers started to fall sick because the dwellings had high levels of formaldehyde, but the mobile homes don't have that problem, and Native American groups have acquired about 2,000 of them so far. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also very happy to have here on the program, once again, the man we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name, and for a long time, he's been here on the program once a month on the first Wednesday. And we talk about cooking and exchange stories and recipes and always have a good time. And he picks the topic. We sit here and wait for him to come down from the mountain with the stone tablet with the topic on it. And so the other day he said he would like to talk about braising. And right away I started thinking, oh, you like braising meat. You know, people use that. It's a good technique, particularly for your maybe less costly cuts. It works well with that. But then the word was, well, yeah, but he's also interested in talking about braising vegetables. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And went on to look at a little bit of information about braising. And I guess the great thing about braising is it's a low heat cooking, and that even I guess some people have contrived a way to do it on the grill outside, so you don't even have to do it in the kitchen. As long as you got a heat source, you can make it work. So we'll tell you all about braising in this part of the show, and maybe if you have a recipe to share, you would call in and do that. And we're always really happy to hear from people who are listening, or you just want to say hi, or you have some kind of wild question. You can just pick up the telephone and call 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free 800-222-9455. And we do also have that email if you want to do that. That's will-talk@will.edu. So he asked, what got you thinking about braising? I always ask this question. What got you thinking about fill in the blank for whatever that is? What got you thinking about braising?
Well, a friend of mine came to town and has been listens in Chicago to programs, and he said, "What are you going to talk about?" Everyone thinks that I'm going to talk about, you know, this is something I'm going to talk about. Mm-hmm. I keep pointing out, no, this is a show that the people call in and tell me what we know about it, and I said, "Well, I don't know. It's not, you know, it's nowhere near the first Wednesday." He says, talk about braised meat. It's the biggest thing in Chicago right now is braised food. And I thought, well, all right. And then it seems to be reasonable to say the holidays are over. You don't have to worry about the barbecue anymore. And you want a nice hearty taste. And that braising is indeed one of the ways. And then I got to thinking about it. Oh, gee, now what does that really and truly mean? I thought I knew, but then... And then again, I'm thinking of family dishes that were done. And I think that a lot of people braise things and don't know that that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like, well, what can you do? Well, you can boil it or fry it or bake it. And then, well, braising is the other thing. And braising is a problem of putting a little of first browning or searing whatever it is that you're going to cook. And then that is put in with a little bit of moisture, not a whole lot. It varies. If you put in too much moisture, you're boiling it. And boiling is a very fast way of cooking the food, but it does another chemistry to the food. And braising then slowly takes things and involves and makes a very enriched liquid that comes with it. So you have a very good soup that comes off of it. And I'm thinking of things that maybe you didn't realize that they're braising, but for example, a boeuf bourguignon is made with wine, and you have to be careful with that because it's wine, because it's thin, and you have to then thicken the juices afterwards, or you use other things and you put a lot of vegetables in, and the vegetables sort of crumble up and end up being the thickening on. So braising gives us many avenues to work with. Mm-hmm. But so I thought people would have some good ideas about, or even think about, wait, why I could be doing that now. You know, one of the things about braising is it takes a while. It's not a 30 minute supper. It takes a while and takes some thought and it takes doing. And then, but all during that period of its cooking, you'd be busy doing something else. So a lot of things are made that take up a time. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe some people would have some good thoughts about things that they like braised. Mm-hmm. I would like to hear from somebody about braised short ribs. Of course, I can't find short ribs. I know they're somewhere. And I did find some one day, but my mother constantly would make braised short ribs. And I couldn't get anything any better. And I haven't had that for years. But I would be interested in the varieties of how you make braised short ribs. And then the braised vegetables. There are some very exotic tastes of braised vegetables. I don't think that we ponder on that enough. They are always a side to something else, you know, a side meat. Then I love the cookbook's definitions that if you're doing one vegetable, that's braising a vegetable. If you do two or three or four vegetables, that's making stew. So that's the difference between a stew and a braise. Oh, so I mean all these, and I think people aren't paying that kind of attention to that, but I believe that they do it and they don't realize that that's what they've been doing.
Sure. Well, one of the things you said when we were talking here that I thought, well, okay, and I guess I can at least grasp that is that if you're asking the difference, am I stewing or am I braising, that apparently has a lot to do with how much liquid there is in there. If there's enough liquid in there maybe to cover everything, well, probably that's stewing. And there maybe also – and then maybe also the thing about the braise is that you really have to – it's a closed
– covered. Yes,
tightly closed
is a major
environment.
Difference.
So you want to maintain that much. So it's got to have the better fitting lid you have, the better it is because the moisture from the cooking, you want it to stay in there. You don't want it to –
And you're cooking it slow, so mm-hmm. it isn't. But you have to watch it. You still have to watch braising, that it doesn't stick and burn, that the water dissipates and burns. The water doesn't burn. The meat burns. but then some you add liquids to, and some you just braise, and let it cook down until maybe it's already almost all gone. It's pretty complex, but I know that a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah. All right. Well, questions are welcome, or recipes,
or
stories
answers.
About braising, or answers. See, that's really what. Yeah, that's really more important. Maybe more important than questions. We're looking for answers.
We're looking for answers,
aren't we all? 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And also, I guess we'd say to people, well, just be, you know, maybe you're thinking, well, it's summertime and braising, maybe you think that's not something that you do something you think about doing in the winter. But because it is a low heat technique. And you can maybe also people think, well, I'm going to do this in the oven. Well, yeah, but I guess it is also possible to do it on
You can braise on the top.
So that it should be the kind of thing that you actually can do without generating a whole lot of heat. And certainly you don't have to turn the oven on. And probably at this, you know, probably at this point, a lot of people are going to say, well, I really don't want to turn on the oven, but I can possibly help myself. So you got a recipe. Give us a call, 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. I'm interested because, as I said, when I heard braising, I immediately thought, well, we're talking about doing something with meat.
Yes.
But I'm interested in this idea of braising vegetables. Do you have something in particular that you think is really good and might sort of show the potential for braising vegetables?
Well, from my mind's eye, I'm recalling braised endive. Or endive.
Or as they say here in these parts.
As they say.
Endive.
Or what are those funny looking things? You slice them and you parboil them for just a few minutes in stock and then put them into a pan and put a small amount of stock. You want to use stock for that. You probably wouldn't use – you could use wine, but stock – you can use water, and what it does is it collects, and then the foods brown just a little bit. Well, by cooking, they just brown. Mm-hmm. But you don't stir them up. You aren't mixing, and so they're sitting there, and they're sort of steeping in this warm, moist atmosphere. But endive is a wonderful dish. And I've always been intimidated by celery. And I have a recipe here that is celery. And it looks good. But you know, I like chonking on a piece of raw celery. And I think, no, you don't want to cook it, you know. But braised celery, braised artichokes. I think that a lot of people have been doing that again and don't know that's exactly what it is, where they are using just a little bit of moisture and then putting them in an enclosed cover the pot and cook them for a little while.
Yeah.
Another good thing is chopped fennel. Fennel we haven't gotten to do that too much. Carrots and onions are very easy to braise, and braised onions with just a little bit of sugar will cause them to caramelize, and a braised onion is a very good taste. I like a baked onion too, very very much, but braising would be a moister one. The baked ones, well, they aren't dry, but there is a difference. There's just – it's the liquid that's with it, and it becomes very much a sauce, and that sauce is really quite desirable. Another thing is the using of wine is very commendable because it adds a lot of flavor to vegetables instead of just using only water or stock. But don't use too much. So, you know, you generally mix the two, but wine has a quality, the acidity in the wine has a quality of keeping the vegetables a little crisper than if you had them in just water or in stock.
Oh, sure.
And the acidity in the wine makes them crisper. And so but it also adds a little bit of flavor to it. And you want to watch that you haven't got something that's too flavorful or else it overwhelms what you're doing. So braising, again, the major thing about it is you are doing it in a casserole or a Dutch oven or even a skillet with a lid. And what happens when you're cooking in that manner is that the moisture rises to the top of the lid and then is to drop down into it and maintain that environment at that level. If you take the lid off, that's why some of the instructions of cooking will say, you know, covered and then for the last 10 minutes take the cover and just not move it off. Well, then when you're doing that, then you're letting the steam dissipate and go out, and the steam then thickens every what thing you're doing. Well, you don't do that with braised. Braised, you keep it sealed. In fact, some dishes, the French, I'm not sure if the Italians do too much, but the French do a lot of making a quick bread dough and sealing around the outside edge of putting this little lip of bread dough around, then slamming the lid on top of it and mashing it around. So it cooks in that, and then you have to break the bread dough off. It's a mess to clean up. But anyway, you had a nice French meal out of that.
Looks kind of cool. I have only seen pictures of this in cookbooks. This is not something that I have ever done. But I can see where what you want is one of these kinds of pans, a good heavy cast iron pot or skillet with a good lid, because you want those things that heat up very nicely, but then will retain the heat. So that once you get it hot, then you can really turn the heat down. And it will maintain this nice level, even heat. And you don't have to add a whole lot of additional heat to keep it at that
right
where you want
right.
it.
Well, I use Dutch ovens a lot, but then I also have a queen of the kitchen variety of a Creuset piece, which is rather large. I had it for some time, called the Dofu. And it seems to me that the word Dofu comes from cooking slowly. I don't know exactly how that fits into French, but it does somehow. It talks about the cooking manner. And the value of this is a cast iron pan that is coated with enamel, and that allows you to use certain acids without changing the nature of the sauces that you're using. Mm-hmm. And then its other feature is it has on the inside of the top of the lid, on the inside of the bottom of the lid, it has little dimples that collect the moisture and allow them to drop back into the pot. And then, of all crazy things, the top of the pot is depressed. There's a depression in the top, and you're supposed to put ice water in that. I've never had the nerve to deal with fire and ice at the same time. But that is part of that particular technique of that particular piece of equipment. And though I never used that feature of it, the very same feature came I think earlier from the Dutch ovens that had the recessed top that you would cook over an open fire, and you would put hot coals on the top of that. If you're a cowboy,
it's like
cowboy making biscuits in Wyoming.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the cowboy thing. Well, it's very interesting. We were talking about this before the show, and so we had to go and do some surfing and look it up, and I was not familiar with this kind of pot, but it's a big cast iron pot, and as you say, that there's an indentation in the lid, and in that particular case, what they really want you to do is
put ice in it,
and that helps keep the top cool so that when the moisture comes up there, it will condense inside the pot, and then go back down on the meat. So it's like you're constantly basting the meat.
Well, that is what you're doing. And you don't have to open it up and let any of that atmosphere, dissipate.
Apparently, roughly translated, Dofu means gentle heat.
Gentle heat. That's it.
Which is what it is.
I knew it was something like that.
Something like that. All right, very well.
Gentle heat.
Gentle heat. It's our monthly show on cooking with this man we'd like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name. And this time around, he says, well, let's talk about braising. We always pick some particular topic and then talk about that and kind of around that. If people want to call in and say hi, ask a question, contribute a story or a recipe, it can be that, or it can be about anything, but that we always at least start one place, and who knows where it is we end up. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. At any point here, people have questions. They certainly should feel free to call. Also, if you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well. That's will-talk @illinois.edu. Well, we did have somebody, but they changed their mind. So in any case, you want to give us a call, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I was just thinking, just a little earlier when you were talking about braising vegetables and putting in a pitch for fennel. Being Italian as I am, of course, not really. But I have certainly had the pleasure of having fennel in various forms, having it raw and also having it braised. And it's a really nice thing. And I think probably a lot of people maybe, you know, you go to – it's now actually fairly available in the store. You go to the grocery store and it's there in the vegetable section. And I imagine there are probably a lot of people who look at it and not know exactly what it is or would say, well, what do you – what do you do with that? And I would, you know,
well,
say,
Rachel Ray likes to chop it up in salads, and Giada De Laurentiis too. They're busy making a lot of salads with the fennel. Uh-huh.
And it's a crunchy thing. Well, if you have it raw, it's a crunchy thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is that essentially it has a kind of a licorice,
yes,
taste to it. So, you know, maybe if you like that or you don't, that might seem attractive to you, but it can be really nice as a braised or sautéed item. I think the cooking tends to mellow it a little bit, and if you get a little caramelization on there, that's really a good thing.
One of the things about cooking the fennel is it wants to be braised in water. You wouldn't put a strong stock with it because It's so delicate and so, you know, licorice candy like, that other strong things. So fennel you would simply braise in water, and you can do that in a skillet on the top. You don't have to enclose that. Some people, I think you mentioned Alton Brown likes to cover it with aluminum foil, and it's the same function is to allow it to cook for an hour or so. Slowly, light, gentle cooking.
This is one of those techniques that you have to plan for it in the sense that
that's right.
You need to know that it's going to cook for a while. So this is not, as you say, this is not a 30-minute meal. But the nice thing about it is this is one of those things that you can put together and let it go.
You don't have to tend
and
it.
You don't have to mess with it. And then later on when you're ready, it can be ready, assuming that you've given it enough time. And that's the appeal of the crock pot, which I guess you could also braise in a crock pot, although that's I think more to fill that up with.
Except it really is braising. You don't always have to put a lot of liquid into it, and you're cooking it slow. You're cooking it covered, so it maintains the same atmosphere, and it's slow. I think for the most part, though, we have a tendency of putting more liquid in the crock pot so that it really is stewing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot.
Well, it could be that you follow your recipe, you put your stuff in there, you put whatever liquid it calls for, and you look at it and you think to yourself,
right,
this is that's not going to work. Because it's too dry somehow. It's just not. But it does. And then when you turn it on, you wait for it to do something, and it doesn't really seem to be doing much of anything for a while. And again, you think, no, of course, this is not going to cook. But you know, give it 6 or 7 hours, and
one of the major prizes of braising is this condensed, enriched, enforced liquid that comes from all of that. You don't get that with stewing. You don't get that with boiling. You don't get that with frying. And this then makes, you would want to say, makes its own gravy. And that is sort of like, that's what you're waiting for. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the meat, but you got any more of that gravy, you know?
Yeah.
Or of the sauce that the vegetables perform, because the vegetables sort of take on a a chemistry of changing. They do indeed soften. They are gentle, and they caramelize a lot, and so it brings out the sugar in them, and then they, and then this enhances whatever that juice is. You pour that over it. Doesn't always have to be freshly melted butter. Mm-hmm. and so that is a virtue of braising, is it? You get a good taste.
Yeah. We're about midway through here, this part of Focus. It's the first Wednesday, and it has been our great pleasure for a long time on the first Wednesday to talk about food and with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. We've been doing this for a long time, and he's been good enough to stop by here the first Wednesday. And we always have fun tossing ideas around and talking about food we have known. And he always starts out by proposing some particular subject, something that's been on his mind, or something he's been making, or something he's been seeing other people make, and say, well, let's talk about that thing. And this time around, he said braising. He was interested in hearing some braising experiences that people have had. And so if you have maybe you have a good recipe or something you'd like to tell us about, 333-9455 for Champaign Urbana, toll free 800-222-9455. And we also do have that email if you'd like to send an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, let me ask you a question here. Now, this is something sort of different, but in all this talk about ending up with these wonderful, flavorful liquids as a result of cooking just now gets me thinking about this. And as I say, it's something completely different. But last night, Mrs. Inge and I, we grilled some steaks on the grill, and I think I did a pretty good job getting them nicely done, but not overly done. So I brought in the steaks and put them on the plate, let them rest, and for a little bit, and some juice comes out. Mm-hmm. So we put the steaks on the plate, and we had this nice juice, and I thought, well, you shouldn't waste that, so we just sort of poured it over the top, did that au jus sort of thing.
Yes.
But then we started thinking, well, now, you know, over time you accumulate little bits of stuff like that. And I'm thinking now, what can you do with that? Could you save it? Could you freeze it? Could you use it, put it into a stock? Could you use it to make a demi-glace? You know, that nice little bits of meat juice that you get along the way? Or do you just pour it over what you've got and try to do something with it that way? I just thought, now this is a great thing. One should not waste this.
I think that's very interesting. I don't think anyone has ever come up with that as a procedure of except mother and the bacon drippings. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Some people use that to
make
gravy.
You did save that. Yeah. Yes, and you would use that in different ways.
Oh, yes.
But I've never heard of anyone saving the juices of things but that is a very good idea. But the trouble is, what are you going to use that on? And you have to invent something else. Yeah. It's too far removed from the use. I would just pour it on top of it and sop it up with bread.
The easiest thing to
do. In fact, that was the major use of bread was to sop up the juices, and things were made and left with juices. Yeah. I'm talking about medieval times.
Well, they actually used bread as a plate.
As a plate. Well, yeah, as a bowl.
As a bowl.
Well, yes. and you sopped, and that's where the word soup came from.
Indeed so.
Yeah. You poured it into you think that going to I will not mention any names of restaurants and getting this bowl of bread and
bowls,
something.
They didn't invent that.
No, they did not invent that.
No. That was invented a long time ago, that idea. Absolutely. Here's a caller in Mahomet. We'll talk with them. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I braised chicken thighs last night.
Oh, good.
It wasn't even planned. I was going to barbecue them on the grill, but I went to the store at the last minute and got home too late. So I put them in a skillet, browned them, and then put some water on and braised them. But my recipe is a classic. I got it, I admit, from a very well-known grill maker's book. And it is just wonderful. I've used it again and again. It's I first marinated the thighs in lemon juice, clove of garlic, salt and pepper, and 1 teaspoon rosemary and 1 teaspoon tarragon.
Oh, tarragon, yes?
Yes. And I did that for about 4 hours because I was gone. And then I came home and cooked it, and it was just wonderful. I poured a little bit of the marinade back on it, but I waited until what was already in it that came off the thighs had evaporated.
It wants to nearly disappear. Uh-huh.
Right. And I didn't have that much liquid, so it was just wonderful.
And it was the liquid that you did have on it kind of got thick and coated things very well, didn't it?
Right. It was just enough to have a little bit with each bite of chicken.
Yeah. Oh, that really sounds great. It was lemon juice and what?
Garlic.
Oh, and garlic.
What you want. And salt and pepper.
Salt and rosemary and tarragon.
Rosemary and tarragon are the secret, and they are just wonderful together with the lemon juice and garlic.
Oh, that is good. I have a beautiful rosemary plant this year. For the first time in a long time, I've been able to make rosemary. And tarragon I used to have in the garden. I don't have that anymore. It sort of disappeared. But I do like cooking with tarragon, and especially with chicken. Chicken and tarragon is such a treat. Well, that sounds good. A little. Were they legs or thighs?
Thighs, and I cut all but a tiny bit of the skin off.
Okay.
And I use dried tarragon that's fresh from the store.
Yes.
And it was very good. I know it doesn't keep long, but
oh, it does too. and I use dried tarragon a lot, because mainly because I don't have the fresh anymore. But I enjoyed you. There is something about that, the dragon tarragon, estragon, is something about the dragon and food that is so good. I like that. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, thanks. I think that it seems that the chicken thigh is a cut that's neglected. I haven't cooked with it very much. And I remember a few years ago, on the show here, we talked with a woman who wrote a really nice Indian cookbook.
Yes.
And I think in all of her chicken recipes, that was the only cut that she used.
The thigh. And not only that, but it was skinned.
Yes. I think that's
and
right.
The major reason is in India, you take the chicken and you just pull the whole skin off of the whole thing. You don't end up with a chicken skin. It is pulled off with the feathers and everything, and you end up with this bare piece of meat. And so, and also all of that extra fat that's in there that you don't necessarily
you don't really need.
Not in Indian cooking. So I would guess that they were indeed skinned.
I'm pretty sure that they were. Might even have been boneless, skinless.
Could have been.
Anyway. Here's somebody on a cell phone in Champaign. Hello.
Morning.
Yes, hi.
Hi. I have a recipe for brisket.
Oh, good.
Marvelous.
Ooh.
First, I get a brisket and trim off essentially all of the fat. If the brisket is a 3 or 3.5 pound brisket, I get 3 or 3.5 pounds of onions.
Oh, okay.
And slice them thin. I'll get a rub of equal parts of kosher
salt,
and sweet paprika.
Mm-hmm.
And rub it all over.
Have you tried smoky paprika?
No.
Try it once.
Well, let me finish.
Yes.
I rub it on all sides of the brisket. I have a large pan, of course, heavy bottomed, that has a cover. I put it on medium high heat, and I brown both sides of the brisket.
Okay.
Then I toss in all of the onions and leave it on medium high heat, put the cover on. A few minutes later, the onions start to sweat out.
Right.
I turn the heat down a little bit. After about 10 minutes, there's plenty of moisture in the bottom. I adjust the brisket so that some of the onions cover the brisket.
Uh-huh.
And there's some underneath. And I put the cover back on. I turn the heat down to fairly low and let it sit for about 2 hours.
Wow, yes.
Notice I don't add any moisture.
I was just going to say, you're getting that from the onions. As right. They're sweating and letting off their juice. So it really is very low in liquid, yes.
Right. But by the time 2 hours has elapsed, remember, if I have 3.5 pounds of onions, that's a lot of onions.
That's a lot, yes.
But they're all caramelized by then.
Oh, boy.
I take the brisket out, and I slice it thin, put it back in for another half hour.
Oh. Okay. Slice it and then return it. Okay.
Right. And then let it cool. It's been covered all this time.
Yeah.
Let it cool and serve it not that day, but at least a day later, sometimes 2 days later.
Oh.
Get that off before serving it.
Yes.
Or reheating it. And it is marvelous.
Because it's going to absorb even more of those flavors inside itself,
right.
Letting it sit. Oh, that's really very – it sounds very complex, but it also is very straightforward.
It's very simple, actually.
Yeah.
And as far as when I slice it, I put a fork in. If the fork if the fork doesn't go in well, I'll let it sit for another half hour, up to 2.5 hours before I slice it.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to show that it's sort of getting cooked all the way through before I do the slicing.
That's very good. I like that. I've never approached that in that manner. That seems awfully good. I like that.
Yes, and the people who eat it swear by it.
Well, I would think so.
I call it pot roast. It's not really a pot roast, but it's the equivalent thereof.
But pot roasts are indeed an example of braising. But this, all those onions. I like the idea that you utilize them for the moisture because you're also controlling it. I mean that's a good control.
Right, and by the time you're all done, there's a lot of moisture there, a lot of liquid.
Uh-huh.
And I often serve this with kasha.
Oh, my, yes.
With the liquid ladled over it, and God, is that a
Oh, that would be good, yeah. That's neat.
Well, enjoy.
Well, thank you very much. I had to ponder on that a bit. Oh, brisket and kasha with this elaborate juice on it. Sounds pretty good to me.
Right. We're talking with Doyle Moore this morning. It's a monthly show on cooking. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Thank you to the thousands of friends of WILL who made contributions during the past year. The impact of your financial support makes the programs you enjoy possible. The next year will be filled with news, information, music, and performance because you took an active role in sustaining the program's service on WILL. Thank you very much for your generous support.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Doyle Moore is the guy here with me. We like to call him our chef in residence for a long time. On the first Wednesday, he's been stopping by. We talk about food and exchange stories and recipes and start with one topic and then meander around. And this time around, he said he'd like to talk about braising, which is a great technique you can do with meat, you can do with vegetables. The nice thing about it is that it is a low heat technique. So the idea is that you're cooking something for a long period of time, long, low cooking. So it doesn't heat up the kitchen terribly much. And you can do a lot of different things with it. So maybe you have a good recipe. Maybe you don't call it braising. See, Doyle started out and said, well, maybe there are people who are doing things. They don't think it's braising, but it is, because the essence is long cooking, low heat, some liquid, but not too much. You know, so
and
you're
covered.
Not and covered. So you're containing all that night's moisture in what you're doing. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And then there's that email. If you'd like to send an email, that's will-talk@illinois.edu. You mentioned when the caller was talking about the recipe, you just mentioned smoked paprika. I just want to put in a plug for smoked paprika because it's just really, really, really good.
It's a
wonderful thing.
It's relatively new to our cooking, probably 5 years that we've been able to get it.
Yeah.
And it came from Spain.
Yeah. And it is a really – so if you know what paprika is, it's like that. But the thing that they make it out of is smoked before they produce the paprika. So it has that kind of smoky thing going on there, and it's really, really nice. It's a really nice thing to cook with. So if you and it's not, as Doyle says, it's not now hard to find. You might have to go to a place that has a little bit more unusual selection of herbs and spices, but it's not hard to find anymore, and it's a really good thing. It's a really nice flavor. So you might want to try it out. What is there something in particular you like to use it for, or just wherever you would use paprika?
I never used paprika that much, and I use smoked paprika more. So I put it in many different things.
Okay. Let's talk with somebody in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. It's a pleasure to hear this show. This is braising is probably my favorite way to cook anything.
See, I told you so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. When I heard you started to talk about it, I mean, my immediate reaction was osobuco.
Oh, my. Yes.
Yeah. But I usually make it. You were asking for recipes, and I don't do recipes.
Well, just talk about what you cook anyway.
Well, I usually use lamb shanks. I don't.
Oh, my. Yes. Yes.
Don't get the veal shanks as often, so I always have lamb shanks around. And I sear them, and then I add, you know, whatever liquid I happen to have around, and add vegetables and orange peel and some chopped up tomatoes. And but when I'm braising, I did exactly like what you were talking about. It's you put what you like in it, and then, you know, whatever liquid comes out of it is going to be gorgeous afterwards. And there's, if you're using the cheaper cuts of meat, and this goes for the chicken thighs too, you get this nice gelatinous quality from the sinew, the tendons and stuff, so that it thickens the sauce.
It jellies it up a bit. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask. I was thinking about like bouffon d'aube and carbonades and things like that, which some people consider stews. I still consider them more braising. How do you fall in the line of do you flour your meat before you sear it? Or do you add the flour
for braising?
Yeah.
Yes, you add the meat. You take the meat and in some instances, we were discussing this. My mother used to take a saucer, a little saucer, sprinkle flour on the top of the meat, and then would pound it with the edge, with the cutting edge.
Oh, okay.
And sort of bash it into. Now, what that does is it makes sure that the meat and the flour are gathered together so that when you brown it then, you get a very, very good heavy crust as opposed to just sprinkling some on and hit or miss that it does. So you pound it. You pound it into the meat that you're going to flour, that you're flouring.
Ultimately, you're trying to make something of a roux.
Yes. Well, it's going to end up being a roux, but it's going to be more positive than if you just sprinkled it and kind of fluffed it over the top, you know.
Yeah.
There's not enough. This pounds it into it and makes it an integral part of the meat, and it does end up forming a roux finally. You know, by the time you're done cooking, you never even know there's a crust on the meat anymore. It's all cooked off.
Oh,
but,
sure.
But, yeah, do make sure you flour it very, very well.
And I wanted to bring up the question of tagines. I don't know if you've ever cooked with
I
because
only in Moroccan movies have I ever dealt with that.
I finally acquired one. I haven't dared to.
Yes.
Because I do cook couscous and
but now the I think the function of the tagine is very much like we're describing. Is
exactly.
it's this covered thing that has a cone to it, and the heat and the moisture goes up and then and does fall back down into the mixture.
Right.
And does it have to be ceramic?
Well, the one that I got is silicone, and that's why I'm scared of using it.
You're
supposed to sear, you know, in traditional tagine recipes, sear in the pan first and then put it in the oven, whatever kind of oven you have.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to use a silicone one on top of the stove. So I think I'm going to have to end up searing the meat in another pan and then roasting it.
Oh, that sounds pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Because sometimes You do well. You see, you could do that in a skillet and be more open, and the frying would go faster. And then pop it into the vessel you're going to cook in. That would be all right. Oh, that's interesting.
It's a lovely show. Thank you very
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Right.
This particular cooking vessel that you use to do this North African braised stew, whatever you call it, the tagine. I have seen these things. I think they're very interesting. I sort of resist buying.
Well, I don't know where to put it. It's
things.
So tall.
Well, that's the problem. And it's a bottom part.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a bowl, a dish, something. It's not real deep, but then it has this odd shaped lid that has this little chimney.
Yeah.
In it,
tall.
And it's tall, and that's the so you would have to your oven would have to be tall enough to fit
true.
It in there. But as you say, it's that same idea. It's that the steam comes off of the thing you're cooking. It goes up in this chimney, but then it cools off and condenses
and goes
back,
right back
down. And it's a really cool looking thing. But I'm not really sure how often I would really.
I was faced with the possibility of being able to buy one once in California not too long ago, and I just resisted. I mean, my first thought was, where do I put it? You know, now if I had a nice Moroccan kitchen, it'd be out on top of the stove all the time. But since I don't, and I don't, and I don't, I didn't know what to do with it. And I've not been served anything from a tagine, other than what I've watched on television when somebody will be doing that, and a lot of them do have a couscousier that they cook with, which is very similar. It's the same situation. It keeps the moisture inside. Yeah. And I've just not done that.
Yeah. I suppose you could do a tagine and you wouldn't have to cook it in one of those kinds. You could cook it in a Dutch oven in a good cast iron pot.
Miss Freitag would not let you get by with a tagine
not cooked in a tagine. All right. Well, let's go. Before we end up out of time here, we have somebody here in Champaign calling
yes.
on line two. Hello.
Hi, this is David calling from World Harvest.
Oh, hi.
I heard you were talking about smoked paprika.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess people don't know where to find it, but we have it here.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, we carry lots of it.
And in different sizes and different amounts, yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Is there something, have you cooked with it, and there's something particular way you like to use it, or you know that?
I usually use it in my paella.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that would be very good.
Yeah, that's how I've used it.
That's
delicious stuff, though. It's quite a bit different from the standard paprika you find.
It is different. It is totally different. That's why I sort of... My heart leaps when I say it because I enjoyed learning about it and I enjoyed being able to get it, and I just kind of get excited when someone mentions paprika.
It's a little bit tough to find too.
Well, I first found it somewhere in Colorado about 6 years ago.
I think it's maybe becoming somewhat easier to find just because I think probably because people know about it. And so they're asking for it.
Yeah, the demand is definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, World Harvest has it.
And at your place, you can probably find almost anything.
Well, you can. I enjoy your attention to foods and cooking there very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, again, if you know wherever you go buy your stuff, you can look for that, and it's really a magical thing. I like to put it in my chili, for example.
Oh well,
that's
yes.
I put it in. It has a really good flavor. Let's take a call here in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
I missed where you said you have lots of different kinds of smoked paprika.
You mean where to buy it?
Yes.
Oh,
well, the fellow who was just on before said that he was calling from World Harvest.
Oh, World Harvest.
And they have it there.
Oh, they have several different kinds there.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I would think if you went to some place where they had a really good selection of herbs and spices to cook with, you'd be able to find it. But for sure, the folks at World Harvest say that they have it there.
There are lots of different kinds. Huh?
Yeah. Well, probably different amounts. It's all a Spanish import. Most of it, I don't think that we make it in America. I think it's all made in Spain.
Yeah.
And so there'd be various imports that have that. But yes, that's really a treat. Now,
okay, thank you.
Not wanting to be in competition with my friends at World Harvest, there is one container of it at Sam's, a smoked paprika.
You mean they know about it at Sam's?
Yes.
All right. Well, and I'm sure there are also places where you can buy it in mail order, but it's
I
think it's always nice
The Spice House. But go down University and you'll get exactly what you want.
Yeah. It's a good thing. And probably, as you say, probably the only real difference between one another is maybe you decide, well, how much do you like this? How much are you going to use? How much do you want to buy at one time?
Yeah.
Because with your herbs and spices, you really want to use them as soon as you can. Don't let them sit around because they'll lose their oomph. Well, let's go to I think Urbana line 2 for another caller. Hello.
Yes,
hi.
I missed what was that rub that you were talking about on that brisk. It said paprika and what else?
Salt.
Salt?
Yep.
Just that salt?
I don't know if it was kosher salt, but it was salt and paprika.
Salt and paprika.
Yeah, and then lots of onions.
Yeah.
And so there were only those two things in the rub.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right, well, very well. Thanks for the call. Someone wants to go real quick. We can get him in. We have maybe about a minute or two left, 333-9455. We also have toll-free line. Good. Anywhere you can hear us, that's 800-222-9455. Any last – was there maybe a quick recipe or something that you would want to mention?
I don't have a quick recipe, but I have a quick reference.
Oh, yes?
I don't want to give the whole recipe.
Yes.
But because in the book that I'm looking at here are these cabbage leaves, rolled cabbage leaves that are braised. And I remember being with someone of Polish descent in Chicago, and we had to go have guamki, and there it was—a good braised a long braised cabbage roll.
And are these the ones that then there is meat kind of a
there's meat
seasoned
meat
and meat on the inside?
Yeah.
And then does this – I remember having long time ago somebody I knew made this, and I always used to bug them to make it, and they said, it was a lot of work. But
it
I
is
really,
a lot of work.
Really liked it. It was a
I think
a
that the
thing.
Lot of work is first you have to get a cabbage, then you cut the core out of it, then you have to boil the cabbage for several minutes, then you have to take it all apart, then you have to let the leaves cool, then you have to pick out the ribs if you can – And then you start making it, you know. And then you have to roll from the left and then to the right and then over and then place it. So it is time consuming. But I remember that being a very, very what you get is exactly that neat thing from the braise is the gravy that came off of that. It was a tomato base. And all of the meats and all the juices and everything thickened up and made a real neat sauce.
All right. Well, I guess for this time around, we'll say we're done.
And it takes about an hour and a half to cook it. But
that's it. Yes, it took a long time to put it together. I always thought it really good, but I didn't have to do the work. Yeah, this person did the work, and I just thought, hey, that's so good. Could you make that? And so it was a lot of work. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Well, here I am.
All right. We'll see you in August.
Yeah, and August is only going to be about 3 weeks
away. I know. I can't quite cope.
See you in 3 weeks.
All right. Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. He's here every month, always on the first Wednesday. We talk about food and cooking.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
We will take a break, as we usually do at this point, so we can bring you an update on the markets and some news from National Public Radio. Then a little bit after the top of the hour, we'll be back with more Focus, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the markets where at the Chicago Board of Trade and in Kansas City. A lot of red on the screen, but I have to tell you, prices are coming off the lows that they made just off of the opening bell and are slowly clawing their way back to neutral. U.S. wheat futures were down off the bell this morning. That was a day after prices notched their biggest gain in 7 weeks, primarily on the pressure that we saw from the Chinese interest rate hike announcement and a firming dollar. China announcing that on Thursday they would be hiking interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point. And that's the third time they've done that this year, as inflation continues to be one of its top priorities, reining in inflation. Let's go ahead and look at some particulars. We'll do that beginning in Kansas City, where July wheat is now trading at a 7.11 and a half, and it's down